Good evening. Don't fall asleep on me. If you need to get up and exercise yourself, go for a jog around the corner. So, because these are all representative questions that have been submitted, I'm not going to be rude and cut them short. So what I'm going to do is put the weights on our three gentlemen out front here. We're going to give you 60 seconds each to answer each response, okay? Cut the fat, trim it, and just spit it out. Being able to travel safely to and from the community is critical for a remote community. We need multiple options, including roads, airport, bus, etc. Little work has been done on our surrounding highways and roads for some time. What can be done to improve our local highways and back roads to improve access and safety? Good on you, Rowan. The clock's ticking.
Okay, well, I would have thought the Stuart Highway's getting plenty of attention, quite frankly. We've had over $1 billion committed across Grey under the former government for highways upgrades, and there's more work on the Stuart coming. I understand the new federal government has committed $400 million for the Stuart, the Augusta and Sturt highways. They're spread across them, but it should enable work to keep going. So I think the Stuart's in pretty good nick. All the other roads come back to state responsibility, but I do sit with Eddie on a panel that meets a couple of times a year to discuss the state of those outback roads. But we just need to, there is federal government money coming through. I just noticed there's a local roads and community infrastructure grant that's just come through basically to Department of Transport for money spent on the outback roads, the dirt roads, the connecting roads. I think that's about $8 million that come through. That was the previous government's commitment. There are the local roads and community infrastructure package in Coober Pedy, I believe, was spent largely on the playground, but it's up to councils how they spend it. In the case of once you get outside the Coober Pedy council, you are dealing with the Department of Transport.
Yeah, one of the things that that people have put to me, and it's not about the highway, but it is about the a lot of the interconnecting dirt roads and the quality of those roads at times, is that there needs to be a review of the type of maintenance, the maintenance schedules, and the whether the privatisation of some of those services has been the best approach, and also the need to more fully involve, and there's ongoing work in this area of a lot of pastoralists have equipment on their properties, mobilising those in a far quicker way to address some of the issues on the roads.
We touched on the airport earlier on, so I there's need for upgrade there. This afternoon we also spoke about the cost of air travel. $650 odd often one way. It's an unregulated route. I think we're all of the opinion that there's price gouging going on. So Rowan's certainly taken that issue on. And of course, the bus, the Greyhound bus, is pretty expensive as well. So they're major issues, Des. In terms of the council's not spending enough on roads, and it just simply hasn't got the financial capacity to do so. But it does need to increase expenditure on roads.
Thanks, Tim. I'll just put these two questions together because they're there. Yep. Can any of you provide an update on what we understand to be current conversations between government and station leases regarding fencing and improving safety in relation to stock? The second is, what's the process for claiming compensation for accident, injury or damage that occurs on leased Crown land along the highway? Same rules.
I'm really not aware of anything around fencing, and I don't know that I could put you straight. I mean, most of the highway is not fenced at all. It's like the leases straddle the highway, and that's why we go over grids as we go down the highway. I don't think there's any chance of building a fence of such standards. It's going to keep the roos off the road, and even if you did, a lot of them would perish because they couldn't cross. So there's all kinds of... I mean, when you drive on these outback roads, you've got to realise you're sharing it with animals, I think, quite frankly. What was the second part of the question? Yeah, well, look, you hit a kangaroo, you hit a cow, you hit a sheep, you go to insurance agents. I mean, they cover all the ones I hit. I suppose if you're uninsured, that's the risk you take. But if you hit livestock, generally speaking, your insurance company will cover up. If it's up here where there's unfenced road, I don't think they'd have any clawback against the pastures. If it's down south where we have got fenced road, they can probably take the if they wish, they could go back and seek compensation from the landholder for not keeping their stock in order. But mostly, I don't think they'd worry about it. So I don't know that sheds much light on what you asked there, Des, at all, but it's the best I got.
And I can't do much better than that.
There we go. Quick game's a good game. Another question from outside. Cooper Pedy demonstrated its critical value as the Far North regional hub of South Australia during the flood emergency in January 2022. It was clear that there were no disaster management plans in place. Our climate is changing and is less predictable. We need to be ready. What will both levels of government do to ensure the towns and stations around Oodnadatta and William Creek are not left underwater during periodic flood events? For example, could main access roads be sealed? Will disaster management plans now be created?
I don't know. I farm at Buckleby. Well, I own a farm there and live there about 80 nights a year. And we had nearly 10 inches of rain there over a 36-hour period. It's never happened before. I don't think we'll be building flood levee banks around the farm in anticipation of the next one coming in 200 years. There's a certain level that you can prepare for, and there's a certain level you cannot. Now, while you might be right, Cooper Pedy, I'm not sure whether it has a disaster plan, but certainly I was in touch with the State Committee through that period. And at federally, I worked very hard to make sure that we activated as soon as possible the National Disaster Relief plan, which allows the federal government to come in behind the state government, and once you get to a certain level, finance 80%. I think actually might even go up to 100% when you get over a certain level. And I spoke to the state disaster relief people. They didn't take notice of everything I said, it'd be fair to say, but they did have a group of people around the table that were meeting regularly. And when I got contact from pastors who said they were cut off and no one had rung them, it came from a couple of pastors, and I was ensured by the State Disaster Relief Committee that they'd in fact rung all the pastoralists to ensure their safety. Now, I don't suppose I can guarantee they'll pick up the phone, but I don't think you can say there is no plan. That's a state plan, but Nettie might want to address that. But I thought, you know, given the circumstances, we got through pretty well. I would have loved to seen Department of Transport stick a road around that's not that big a lake at Glendambo. There were people going around their four-wheel drives anyhow. I reckon they could have pushed it off and laid a bit of rubble on it and actually had the transport moving as well. And I suggested that, and I wasn't the only person who suggested it. But they elected not to go that pathway, and then, of course, they drained the lake and got it dry and whatever. But who's to know with floods? You can't tell with New South Wales anymore, but I don't expect that we're going to get rainfall quite like that again. I don't think if it falls again like that, it'll probably be 100 kilometres to the west or 100 kilometres to the east, the storm cell. So you can't make everything impervious. You've just got to make it a really good standard and hope that it withstands most of what nature throws at us, I think.
Yeah, I guess one of the important things is that after an event like that, there is a review of the things that were done. I had a little bit of involvement, was contacting the SES in Adelaide and the minister, and also took part in some of the Zoom and Microsoft team hookups with Rowan and others about what was going on. There was a few things. I think communication could have been better. And some of the communities like people having to rely upon the Pink House and his plane and one other small plane to get stuff in there. I think that should have been at another level. So I think those things, when it comes to communities being isolated, both for the residents and for the tourists that were trapped there, I think there could have been a more effective response. But those are things that can be reviewed and if it happens again, improved upon.
I'll just add a small bit. And the Defence Force was made available as soon as it was asked for by the State Disaster Relief. Until they're asked, they're obviously not going to come thundering in, but as soon as it was asked for, it was provided.
Yeah. Just a brief comment from myself. Look, I thought it was the response was fantastic from all levels of government. I've got to say, though, a lot of, some of it was being made up on the fly, that worked out ultimately. But like all things, you can learn from it and tighten things up. And I think the council still needs to tighten up its role in emergency management. That's an area that we're potentially underdone in.
Finally, that brings us to the airport. It's a critical piece of infrastructure for emergency provision and support, regular passenger services, freight services and tourism charters. As a community, we can see growth opportunities in tourism markets, more support for locals and savings to both state and federal governments for local personnel travel. Our airport needs a lot of work, including key infrastructure upgrades to host larger aircraft, a terminal upgrade if we want to attract additional airlines, upgrades to rental and car storage facilities, etc., etc. We can't afford that alone. Other regional and remote communities have received significant funding support to commence and complete upgrades. What could both the state and federal government do to support the development and growth of the Coober Pedy Airport?
I think at the last upgrade at the Coober Pedy Airport, I'm not sure if the federal government provided some money, the state certainly did. Pardon? So it is a case that if a demonstrated need is there, there are mechanisms available to get funding support if it stacks up. And that could come from a federal level or it could come from a state level. It's often you need, especially if you're talking about attracting other airlines and this and that, you need to really establish a business case. I'm told that there's 6,000 passenger numbers here, and there's airports with far bigger numbers that might only have one airline. It can be challenging. If you're seeking to justify any reasonable expansion, and you don't want that burden to fall on the ratepayers in your community, you will need a good business case, not just we'll build it and see what happens. You need some rigor behind it, and you need some genuine commitments, because a lot of money could be spent for no good purpose.
Yeah, this came up in our discussion this afternoon, and it's a considerable amount of money to strengthen that runway to the point where it could take 50-plus aircraft. And I think before a government would be likely to do that, they'd want to be ensured that the airline was going to stick around. There is also the added fly in the ointment that if you go to aircraft that operate more than 50 people, you're actually going to have to put in full security scanning. Now, this was something that I was opposed to airports like this having to do in my party room and in Canberra, and spoke against in the Parliament. I said, this is what will happen, and we are dealing with exactly that circumstance in Whyalla at the moment, where it's debatable about whether or not we can keep the security scanners, because they cost over $1 million a year just to run. And guess what? If you get someone in for one flight, you've got to employ them for 4 hours, because that's the minimum employment period. So they become incredibly expensive to run. Now, if governments, if the local community takes the risk on getting enough passengers through to pay for the scanners, and you really need probably $150,000 a year to break even on them, without outputting ridiculous costs on the passengers, then you run the risk, if your airline pulls out, you're stuck with all this infrastructure you can't get someone to use. I actually, while I'm really upset what I'm informed Rex are charging for single fares out of Coober Pedy at the moment, I think they're well positioned to keep providing service, because they actually run the kind of aeroplanes we need in a place like Coober Pedy and not incur that extra cost. I'm quite happy, as always, to talk about proposals and ideas. And if you want, if council wants some help on this, that's what the RDAs are for, to help deliver some kind of business proposal. But some work needs to be done for us to be even contemplating, I think. Now, unless we can sort of stitch up the numbers and be pretty confident it's going to become a success, it's not much of a celebration for the town if it works for 6 months, is it? I mean, we need this continue to work over the long period of time, so it needs to be a successful venture. Now, I've long thought that Coober Pedy would be the place to stop that Melbourne flight to Darwin, for drop people off for a day and run around and then pick them up the next day, but getting an airline to do that is going to be quite a challenge, I think. And so we need someone like Qantas or Jetstar or what's the other one? Oh, there you go. Virgin, on the sticky paper, and not just on the sticky paper, we'll give it a trial. We want you hanging around for 5 years if we're going to spend this kind of money. Now, I think that'll be really hard to get out of them, but I, if we're going to make that kind of expenditure, you'd want to make sure it was going to be used.
Thanks, Rowan. I agree with what Rowan and Eddie have said. The airport is obviously operated by the council. It runs at a significant loss, about $220,000 a year. The council hasn't tackled that issue because of the pandemic. Wasn't the time to be lifting the charges to use the airport. By coincidence, there's a special council meeting tomorrow night where that will occur. The head tax, the tax on each passenger, hasn't increased since 2007. That's, what is it, 15 odd years ago. So it will be doubled in all probability tomorrow night from $9 to $18, and the other charges will likewise go up significantly as well. That will have the airport operating at break even. In terms of the future, there is a master plan. It was done, I think, in 2015, that needs to be updated. As the two previous speakers have said, there really needs to be a master plan justification for any future investment. And there is significant money provided, particularly by the federal government, in terms of airports, regional airports. So, but we need to develop a business case for that. So we've got a fair bit of work to do on the airport. We haven't made much progress in terms of improving things in the time that I've been here.
Thank you for your questions, gentlemen. Thank you for your responses.